This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
And in your ag news for this Wednesday morning, in a flurry of meeting with reporters yesterday in London, President Trump says he has no deadline for finalizing a complete trade deal with China. China and the U.S. are still working to reach a Phase 1 agreement with an unofficial deadline of December 15th, but an overall agreement may be extended beyond the 2020 election. Trump told reporters, "In some ways, I think it's better to wait until after the election." Trump says China wants to reach an agreement, adding, "The China trade deal is dependent on one thing. Do I want to make it?" Trump claims he is doing very well in the talks with China. The president also pointed out the $28 billion in trade aid given to U.S. farmers, with many billions left over, adding the funds that got them whole. China wants Trump to remove tariffs in reaching a Phase 1 agreement that also includes $40 to $50 billion in purchases of U.S. ag products over 2 years. In livestock news, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association Executive Committee unanimously approved efforts to work with the Department of Agriculture to address geographic origin statements. NCBA is firmly opposed to mandatory country of origin labeling and is seeking solutions which will resolve the concerns of beef producers while protecting commerce and meet trade obligations. Specifically, NCBA is looking at a food safety and inspection service labeling requirement and verification procedures in place for beef products labeled as product of the USA, made in the USA, or similar origin claims. NCBA CEO Colin Woodall says that while beef products currently are advertised, marketed, or labeled as product of the USA and are likely compliant with current Food Safety and Inspection Service regulations, the potential for consumer confusion still exists. NCBA believes that beef labeling with voluntary country of origin labeling marketing claims should be verified through existing USDA framework that is market-based and respects international trade commitments. The organization says it is critically important that any changes not trigger retaliatory tariffs for Mexico or Canada that have already been approved by the World Trade Organization. In other national ag news, many in agriculture who were around 3 decades ago remember the crisis that impacted the farm economy and wonder if present conditions may lead to a repeat of that situation. A recent panel discussed some of the current policies, practices, and possibilities in place and in the future that could prevent a return of the 1980s farm crisis. Rod Bain presents their thoughts in this edition of Agriculture USA.
The farm economy of the present and what can be done to avoid the farm crisis of the 1980s was the topic of a recent panel discussion moderated by someone very familiar with the 1980s from a farm and policy perspective, former Agriculture Secretary John Block.
I had two farmer friends of mine in my county. They got in so much trouble with 18% interest that they had to go bankrupt. They survived later, but that's how bad it was.
So what is available to the ag sector to avoid an economic repeat of 3 decades ago? David Shem pointed to differences in farm policy and programs from the 1980s to today. His perspective comes as a wheat farmer in Kansas 3 decades ago.
We've transitioned from government-controlled production into producer-controlled production. I can still remember crawling onto a tractor and driving out into a wheat field and destroying 20 acres of beautiful wheat growing out there because we were over our wheat base. But we don't have that anymore.
And as USDA Farm Service Agency Kansas State Director today, his agency offering farm safety net programs like agricultural risk coverage and price loss coverage to producers.
We have a flexibility in them that allows our producers to do best what they have done for so many years, and that's called adapt to the challenges they face.
Longtime independent grain market analyst Dave Dirtschholz says low commodity prices is something both the 1980s and the present have in common. Yet 3 decades ago, the newly created Conservation Reserve Program was the policy catalyst to improve the farm economy.
We took 30 million acres out of production in a span of about 3 years, and that really lifted us out of the problems we had back then.
What is different between the three-decade period is a more globally integrated ag economy, both from a market and a policy perspective.
Do they have the wherewithal to do that in Brazil, to do that in Russia or Ukraine or in Argentina? Are they going to put policies in place to pull acreage back? And I would say, I doubt it.
Instead of policy, some like Dirch Holtz and Missouri farmer Garrett Rykoff believe advances in technology and analytics may be the driver that pulls the ag economy to a better position. Rykoff himself notes some of the advances today compared to when his father operated the family farm in the 1980s.
This notion of weatherproofing your crop. Many of these attachments do in-season fertility. We can do no-till. Just-in-time aerial application is much more common. Those things were not being done when my dad was my age. I'm certain that's going to give me a leg up.
And says the use of analytics will grow in importance as producers like himself deal with what he calls razor-thin margins to get through to the next uptick in the farm economy.
And margins are so thin that if they become any thinner, land prices become higher. It's too tempting for my wife and I to rent the ground we have or sell it for $9,000 or $10,000 an acre because I can't even pay the interest on a piece of ground for $7,000.
Rykoff also sees opportunities for producers today that were not available in the 1980s, not just in export markets, but domestic ones as well. For instance,
that's an opportunity that will shield me against selling number two yellow corn for my family's bread and butter, if you will. I can hook up with a company who would like gluten-free X or free-range birds. Now I'm not just selling a commodity. That shields me, helps me understand that, hey, I'm a little more connected to this market. I can work with the end user, and at this point, that is all the rage. Vertically integrating is really, I think, more common in larger growing operations than it ever was. That's also another insulation.
This has been Agriculture USA. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Moving on into state ag news now, a topic gaining momentum in government is the expansion of rural broadband access. The Illinois Department of Agriculture and many others are exploring the best ways to make sure people in rural areas have reliable and fast internet connectivity. Congressman Rodney Davis is among a group now joining that cause. He says his goal is to make sure dollars appropriated towards broadband expansion are being used appropriately.
You know, I've worked with some of my colleagues who are freshman Democrats, Anthony Delgado out of New York, and also Abigail Spanbarger out of Virginia. You know, we want to come up with some good solutions when it comes to rural broadband. You know, when we did the last farm bill, we made some good strides in providing authorizing funding for rural broadband expansion, but we have to actually appropriate dollars to those authorizing levels. And that's what we're trying to do. And as a matter of fact, too, we also put some standards in place that weren't in place before, so that if there's a company, Seth, that gets rural broadband dollars, they're going to have to live up to what they promise they're going to deliver to constituents. We've had a problem in the past where companies would take federal dollars and then never, ever meet the performance standards that they promised, and they've locked everybody out from actually competing for those same areas. That's wrong. So if you don't provide that standard, Seth, we're going to take your money back.
According to Davis, this is something the government cannot fix on its own. While they can distribute money, it has to be something taken to the finish by local government and their companies.
Yeah, this is a multi-layered approach that you have to take. The federal government does not have the money or the ingenuity to come in and provide rural broadband to all of our rural communities. What we need to do is focus the last mile recipients on the federal dollars that are out there. Because what you don't want is the USDA coming in and giving money for somebody to compete in places like Taylorville, where we have three broadband providers. And one of them being a local company that's operated in the tech sector for decades, and they made the investment to run fiber around our entire community. Billy and Adam at CTI have given us 1 gig speed. They don't have that in Springfield. A lot of times, local governments have to watch their local franchise agreements that may limit competition from companies like CTI that can expand into their area. So we don't want government money competing with entrepreneurs that are doing the job of wrapping communities in broadband.
According to a letter from Davis and his colleagues to Congress this year, USDA began accepting applications for the first round of ReConnect grant and loan awards. In this first application cycle, they saw approximately a 3-to-1 ratio in funding sought to funds available. Moving on now to the local Ag Community Bulletin Board. The Montgomery County Farm Bureau Young Leaders will be holding their December meeting on Thursday evening at the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro. That meeting Thursday evening will start at 7. This Saturday morning, the Montgomery County Extension Office will be holding a pet treat workshop at the Extension Office in Hillsboro. Again, that will be held Saturday morning from 9 until 10 for ages 5 to 10, and you do not need to be in 4-H to attend. For more information, you can call 532-3941 or visit extension.illinois.edu/cjmm/events. Next Tuesday, the Christian County Extension Office will be holding a hands-on pressure cooker workshop at the Janice Hopper Auditorium at the Taylorville Memorial Hospital. That'll be held next Tuesday at 2:30 in the afternoon and 6 in the evening. You can pre-register by visiting web.extension.illinois.edu/cjmm or call Janelle Cornell at the Taylorville Memorial Hospital at 217-824-1840. In other bulletin board news, the Hillsboro FFA chapter is currently collecting new unwrapped toys for their toy collection for Toys for Tots. You can drop the new unwrapped toys off at the Hillsboro High School Ag Building and in the main building. You can do that through Friday, December 13th. For more information, you can call Hillsboro FFA advisor Noah Gallion at 618-499-8814. Also, the Highland FFA chapter is collecting toys for their Fill a Tractor Bucket toy drive. Multiple locations for the drop-offs are in Highland, Grant Fork, Alhambra, and Trenton. You can also drop toys off through Friday, December 13th. Those toys will be going to the St. Louis Children's Hospital. And if you need any more information about Highland's FFA toy drive, you can contact any Highland FFA member. And that'll wrap it up for this Wednesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us or any community bulletin board for us, you can email that to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Wednesday morning, December 4th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.